I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Dave Warner. Welcome, Dave.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Well, you're on an annual pilgrimage to your old home site?
I probably get over about 2 to 3 times a year in general. Sometimes it's a bit more and occasionally a bit less. But yes, this time there's generally at least one time that I'm over to talk about books or play a music tour, and that's certainly this time. And then I'm back in May, actually, as it turns out. So, but that was that's a bit of a one-off. I'm usually not that quick.
Well, it's great to see you, and great to see you in the Fremantle area. And whilst we have a good amount of crime in Fremantle and in Western Australia, I gather the rest of the country has plenty of crime going on.
Yeah, no shortage of crime, of real crime in places like New South Wales and Victoria anyway.
And your latest book, about to be launched by Fremantle Press, published and hitting the bookshelves, is called River of Salt. Now, tell me very briefly, we'll come back to it in a moment, where does this fit in your genre of thrillers and your general writing? Because you write more than thrillers, you write more than novels, you've written for television, and you, I think, written children's books,
yep.
And you write music. So where did this one come from?
Well, this is my 9th crime novel, and so most of the novels, pretty much all the novels that I've written that have been published have been crime novels. I've got an unpublished literary novel that no one thinks is good enough to publish, so we'll have to wait for that yet. But the inspiration for this, as it turned out, what happens when I write, my writing process is usually just I get a really strong idea about something, and it might be a scene or an image, or it might be a feeling, a tone that I want to capture in a book, and I set out to try and write that. And the case of this book, what happened was I was sitting around watching, I think it was Mad Men, that TV series of about ad men that I loved.
Yeah, great show.
And very 1960s, and each, I really liked the fact that each episode had a kind of thematic wholeness to it, even though it didn't really have it wasn't plot-centric, but it had this theme that kind of worked in. And as it happened, I'd been watching that, and then my friend Martin Cilia, who's a guitarist and has played with me for many years, is probably now considered Australia's premier surf guitarist and one of the world's premier surf guitarists. And Martin was playing with an Australian band, The Atlantics, that some of the older people will remember, who had a huge worldwide hit in the 1960s called Bombora. And he was playing not far from where I now live in Manly in Sydney. So I went down to see Martin play, and went down to the place where they were playing is a little downstairs bar, and it's got a very 60s, it probably hasn't altered since the 70s, but, you know, that could equally, it's called the Old Manly Boathouse, so it's got a kind of floors and, you know, crusty stick to the carpet type floor. And as I was listening to the Atlantics play their music, and I'm in my 60s now, so what was flashing in my head were things like the Annette Funicello, James Darren 1960s and Gidget films, all those funny surf films, Ride the Wild Surf, and, you know, those crazy films that they had, which were just teen fillers in a way. But I, coming off the back of watching Mad Men, which tends to have a lot more gravitas about it, although there's humour, was this weird mix, and it was like I was watching it was like I had a soundtrack going to what was happening in my brain at the time, and my brain was churning through, saying, "Is something here? I want to do something with this tone and this feeling of the early 1960s surf culture." But I didn't know, is it going to be humorous or funny, or is it going to be more dramatic? And my initial thought was to do a TV series, and I started to think about a television series, and because my strength is in crime, I guess I automatically started to think that might be a good way to go. So it evolved from there, really, an idea of what would be a gripping crime story from the various experiences that you accumulate that could take you through this weird combination of early 1960s surf culture, which tends to be innocent and pristine.
Well, there'll be a book review accompanying this audio interview on Fremantle Shipping News, and I'm pleased to tell you your book gets a very good review. and I love that 60s stuff. And I might just be a couple of years older than you, but you evoke the 60s superbly well. And so there's going to be a range of people, both older and younger, who'll get it, set on some fictional place in northern New South Wales, by the look of it. But just talk about the technique of writing for a minute. You're quite prolific. Do you set yourself a deadline? Did your publisher say, I want this in by a certain time? Is that the way you write, or are you sort of taken by the muse and just write when it grabs you?
It's a bit more the muse idea. What tend to happen, I get the muse moment, which is on most of my books or ideas that might turn into books that start as screenplays. I have this idea that I think this is a really great notion. And as I say, it might be kind of atmospheric and tonal, like this book was, River of Salt. Some of the others, it's more really specific, a really specific idea that I think, oh, that's an interesting idea that could make a good story. Now, what I tend to do then is jot down very briefly some kind of beats or ideas on that story, and then sometimes pursue whatever else I'm doing, because I'm usually in the middle of doing something else. And that can take 10, 12 years before I actually visit that, before it breaks the first novel that I'd done in 10 years, because I'd been working in television a lot. I'd actually had that idea nearly, I think it was 10 years before, by the time I started the book. This one was probably about a year or two. But what tends to happen then is at some point when I get the free time, I will start to write a draft. And then once I've got a draft down, I'll send it off to the publisher and editor, who will then decide whether they are interested in taking it further. And from that point, I'll then get specific deadlines, like we want a rewrite done within 3 months or 6 months. But the initial time period is much, it's up to me, and that will vary from book to book. River of Salt was great for me because it was probably the easiest and most enjoyable book that I've written, in the sense that I said in the 1960s, so I didn't have to worry about criminal detection. Are there CCTV cameras? Will phones download that app quick enough? All these sorts of things that when you're writing modern crime fiction, you have to bother about. So one, I didn't have to bother about that. But secondly, because at the period that this was set, I was probably somewhere between 7 and 10. And those memories are very evocative and resonant for me. And there were things that I was able to just dredge up or remember from childhood growing up, that it was fun to explore and to remember those things. And whether it was fashion or for example, I remember that everybody in the kind of middle class houses where I grew up in, Bicton, Applecross, around those areas in the early 60s, the height of decor in the lounge room was the tropical fish tank. That was a real big deal. And so I had to have a tropical fish tank in the story.
Hasn't gone yet.
It's still there. Well, there's a lot to be said for the tropical fish tank, but it was a really big kind of new thing then. Men joining golf clubs and getting into golf as a kind of status thing, or an attempt to break into status, was something that I remembered from that time. And the dishes that in those days was predominantly women were going to be cooking. The tuna mornay was the big one, and that which segued into the 70s became apricot chicken. But I think the go-to dish of the 60s was the tuna mornay.
I think I still prefer the tuna mornay to the apricot chicken. But now, you've each of us have started to identify where we fit in to this story chronologically, if you like, or in terms of eras. But in a similar vein, you are obviously a very artistic person. You got into music, well, I assume relatively young, and then you got into writing. When you were, say, 10, maybe that's too young, but when you were a teenager, did you imagine you were going to have the sort of career you are having?
I wanted to. I distinctly remember at school, I think it was in year 7, as you were going into your high school, you had to write down what did you want to be. And I put down writer. And I remember my dad, who was a butcher, going and a Fremantle, Warner's Butchers in High Street, Fremantle, for about 50 years, he and his father before him. And, you know, he had great visions of me becoming a lawyer or a doctor or something useful. And you
not,
know,
not a butcher.
No. He preferred I was a, I'll give him this, he preferred I was a writer to a butcher, or even a musician to a butcher. He said that's too hard a life, you know. And but he was tearing his hair out when I said, he was going, no, you know, how can you do that? And it's true. I like it. And that was the thing that obviously I was confronted with in my teenage years, that how do you get from being a would-be writer to a writer?
Well, that's really the question then I wanted to get to, because many of the shipping users, readers and listeners are probably all frustrated writers and television writers and poets and the like, some of them real. But how did you realise it? Was it a matter of determination and sticking at it?
Yeah, definitely. I think anything in life, particularly the artistic community, it is you've just got to keep knocking on doors, and that the door might be your own personality. You might have to keep forcing yourself up and dredging yourself up. You know, I'm lucky that I was able to. You can get depressed for a while if you get a bad review or a knockback or you miss out, but I kind of have this optimism that keeps me going on that, although it's always only half full to three-quarter full. But so what happened was I thought, look, I'm not going to be able to write a novel as a 14-year-old. And I was also interested in music, as most of people my age are and, you know, certainly were then. And so I started playing in garage bands with my friends and writing songs. And what happened was I formed myself a career through my 20s as playing music and as being a songwriter. But even through that time, I was still interested in, you know, I never gave up on wanting to write plays and films and particularly books. So there was a point in my life, I'd stopped playing full-time. I came back and was doing some recording with music, but by that stage, I wasn't big news anymore, and I didn't want a tour, and I wasn't big enough to just sort of record and be able to do a few concerts here and there like some of the really big bands. So I had nothing to lose, and I'd been reading a lot of crime novels of the era of early 90s, this was, of people like James Ellroy and Elmore Leonard, and I thought, you know, I think I can do this. I'd done some murder weekends with some friends at which started off at Cave's House in Western Australia, where I wrote the plot of, you know, like a murder that happens in and around you, and that was because I got totally into Agatha Christie. And so I thought, I'm going to give this a shot. And so I literally, for my first novel, City of Light, I just sat there on day one and had some ideas. I didn't have the nous or the common sense to structure anything. I just started at page one, and it took me about 4 years to get the first book finished, because I'd have to stop and do a tour, or, you know, it wasn't like I could sit down and do 3 or 4 weeks. But in terms of your general thing for other people, I think if you want to be a writer, read a lot, you know, that's the first thing. If you want to be a musician, listen a lot, you know, and then if you can, and this is probably the tricky thing, is to take yourself out, if you're passionate and you're loving it, remove yourself one from that element where you're reading, and ask yourself, how is the writer making me feel like this? How is the guitarist, how is that group making me feel? What are they doing? You know, try and, instead of just being carried on the wave, which is great, but try and analyse it a little bit without being too analytical. And in my day, there were no creative writing courses. There were no, musician
courses. So how did you go about that? I was going to say, I know young people, they grow older as they do it, undertake creative writing courses here, overseas. The people write reviews of books, and they're engaged in a whole literary process as well. Did you undertake anything formally or informally like that?
No, I did, 2 years at Uni WA doing English, which was mainly literary appreciation, critical appreciation. In those days, you'd read a poem and you'd have to dissect it and analyse it. So, no, I didn't. And I think the creative writing courses, it's a two-edged sword. You're going to be able to produce people who can probably distill ideas, get them on the page, and they'll have techniques that people who've never written before won't possess. But people who've never written before may have a huge wealth of personal experience and life experience that somebody who's just come straight from school and gone to a creative writing course has. So each, you know, each has an advantage. It's like I listening to people doing music courses are the same thing. I can hear people, they can sing brilliantly, they can sing better than any of the people that I grew up singing with or play their instruments better. But they don't necessarily have as much to say. And so it's something, if you're undertaking a course, you still got to experience life, you still have to think of it from your point of view. And if you've never done that, Don't be intimidated to not go and do it. Go and do a creative writing course. Get some ideas from it. But also don't be put off. Don't think, oh, you know, my whole life I've been working in a storeroom in Woolies and I can't do it. It's going to be harder for you, definitely, but it doesn't mean it can't happen. And if you do crack it, you might be better than anyone.
Now, you've mentioned the music. Was there ever a danger that you were going to be typecast as Dave Warner from the Suburbs, and that was it? And you obviously wouldn't be able to write a thriller or anything else because you were just a musician. Did you ever run up against that concept?
Look, I think so. Again, there's the fact that I was a musician and I had a history enabled me probably to get publishing deal or to get publishers interested in the first place. If you've got a public profile in the publishing industry, they're really interested because it's hard to sell books and it's hard to get shelf space. But on the other hand, you can do something that you think is just as good as somebody who's a known writer, as a, you know, purely as a writer, and you're perhaps not given the same level of weight or credit to what you're doing as it. Yeah, it's like a second string, like a fun thing, but it's not. So, I think there is some element of that. It's gradually now on my ninth novel. I think that's dissipated, and I think by about my sixth novel, when I got the Ned Kelly Award for for books, that was probably a recognition from peers and people within the industry. But to be honest, I think my first couple of books were just as good as my sixth book. You know, I don't think there was a few in between that were different. They were fun books, and you wouldn't consider them for that sort of award. But so I think there is an element that people think, yeah, he's a rock musician, but he wouldn't be able to write. But I suppose anybody younger wouldn't have any idea of what I used to do now, so they would have no clue of my history as a rock musician.
Well, I can assure you, you're more famous, certainly around these parts, than you might think. But come back to this book in particular. It strikes me and my co-reviewer of River of Salt that you really seem to get women. You've got some significant women in this book, and you seem to get into the minds of them. And some of your script writing for television, you've had to deal with women as well. Do women present for men? I assume they do. Who are writing a challenge?
Yeah, I think it can, and it depends on the style of book that you want to do. As you said, I started my television career. One of the first things that I did a lot of was write episodes for McLeod's Daughters, and I specifically chose to do that, which was 100% away from the areas that I was most interested in, which was either sitcoms or crime. And I did that because I wanted to get better at writing it. Now, whether it made me better at it or not, I don't know. I think for me, the thing is, most of the books that I've written have probably been more male-oriented books, and that's just the stories that presented themselves to me for whatever reason, and I was seeing it from that point of view. And I also felt that the kind of literary and the whole space these days for in creative fiction and film is so overrun at the moment with strong female characters, you know, that it's like, well, there's so many people doing that, there's not much point. So I didn't deliberately set out to do it. I just wanted to write all my characters. I wanted to be complex, believable characters. But I am really thrilled and pleased that a number of women who've read the book, who read a lot of books, have related very strongly to those characters. So, I mean, I can't tell you how happy I am. It's a great question because for once I can say I feel really good about that because I know my stuff has tended to be, not all my things, but most of them have tended to be male-oriented, and that's just the idea that popped into my head.
There's a lot of thriller writing or sort of Scandinavian noir writing that becomes very city or province specific. It almost becomes like a tour guide. And I think there are some places in the world, Fremantle included, I think, where people can bring their favourite crime novels with them and walk the streets. Is there some sort of history to this? Do you find that in all crime writing?
Not in all crime writing, but I mentioned Before It Breaks before, which was the novel that I had a 10-year hiatus in between my previous lot of crime writing, and I just got too involved with film and television. I didn't have the time. I had a family growing up, and the only thing that pays well in Australia in terms of constant writing is television, so that's where my goal went. But when I had that idea, and it was 10 years before, and the idea for doing Before It Breaks, which was set in the Kimberley with a story that harks back to Hamburg in the 1970s. And the genesis of that idea was after I'd read a lot of Henning Mankell and a lot of the Dave Robichaux stories where the sense of place was so strong and so overwhelming that you had a real... The third character, you know, was the location. And I specifically set out on that one to do that. And so my question then became, okay, where in Australia is a location that is totally unique and you can get that feeling? And that was the Kimberley.
God's own country.
Yeah. And then, and so then it was the Kimberley. Where's the complete opposite to that? And I thought London initially, and then I thought, oh, well, that's still kind of English language. What about Germany is really different? So the genesis of the story that keeps harking back is 1970s Hamburg to 2015 Kimberley. I'm blabbing on, but I think that in a lot of crime writing, that's a fabulous element, and it has become more so that people are looking for that kind of semi-tour guide thing. But it's exciting, I think, if you haven't been there, and if you have been there, it's not bad either because you recognise the places.
Another thing that often comes through... Another thing that often comes through in crime writing is a social sort of theme that is developed. And one suspects it's a bit dangerous to become political or to start wearing your part on your sleeve about some issues. Is that something you have avoided or that you try subtly to deal with?
I try and deal with it very subtly. I actually find that sometimes, particularly with Australian crime, my other Australian crime writers, one of the only criticisms I have of them is that when I read the stories, and the Brits too a bit, I feel like I'm listening to the liberal arts student who got the writing degree and then did it. I don't believe sometimes their characters hold the views that they're purported to hold. So that, to me, is the danger. And it's an interesting line to tread with characters. And I try and just look at my characters as being as people that I knew or know, people who hold those jobs. You know, like most of the cops that I know, they're not particularly tolerant or liberal, or they don't particularly question the system a lot. Some do, but you know, and so you try and get that veracity in your story. But I think it's also a great thing to have to make political, social, and cultural points if you can along the way, and that's a chance for the author to express themselves and to maybe have a little, you know, a little bit of influence on the world around them, other than the straight plot line of the story.
Now, we're getting close to the end of the interview, but the hero, or perhaps some sort of anti-hero in River of Salt, is a fellow called Blake. And we perhaps shouldn't say too much about him. People have to discover him for themselves when they read the book. But did he come purely out of the imagination?
Yes, he did, but there were forerunners. So I think the influence on Blake's character, who we can say is when we first meet him, he's got some dealings with the Philly mob. So he's an American. And I think there was a book that I read, the book of short stories by Georges Simenon, and there's a fabulous story in that, The Brothers Rico, that always stayed with me. And so there's an element of The Brothers Rico in that story, and that permeated the book. It's not a big element, but it goes towards Blake's character. Georges Simenon, if people haven't read him, have a look, because he gives you great depth of character. He wrote Maygrave, so the Maygrave stories are from his, but also wrote a lot of other stuff. So that was probably one element where that came about, but the rest of it, imagination and people that you know and attitudes that you know, and it may be that I might take an attitude from someone I knew who was a butcher with my dad, and I might put that with the policeman or the school teacher, but you know, they tend to come from your own experiences somewhere along the line.
Now, here's a question you don't have to answer, but I wonder whether we might see Blake re-emerge in some later thriller.
Look, we might do. I'd written it as a standalone. As I say, a lot of my stories start as standalones, and then I go, yes, there's a chance to do something with this character or these characters or one of the other characters in the book. So there's a possibility, but nothing planned. But some of my other ones that from previous books, I have ideas for them. And one of them, my second novel, Big Bad Blood, there's a couple of characters there that have been waiting around for now 20 years, and I've got an idea where I'm taking them. So that's two books. And Dan Clement from Before It Breaks will be my next one, after the next one that I can't talk about that I'm working on.
Well, that's fantastic. And that's a good place to bring an interview like this to an end. A man who's been having a very busy, long-running career in the arts, in music, in writing, and it hasn't ended yet. Do you imagine you'll just keep writing until you drop?
Look, I would love to think that. It does get a little bit harder to, as you get older, it's to put in the long hours, I find. I still put a lot of hours in, but the focus and the retention of things, you know, everything takes a bit of time. And of course, the biggest problem is, are the publishers going to keep publishing you and are the readers going to keep reading you? So if I can expand my reading base and get more numbers up, then I reckon I'll be writing for a few years yet, at least.
Now, on the PR side, that answer requests a question to, you're here for a little while. Where can people who want to hear you talking about your book and where are the events going to be?
I'm doing a library tour, you could say. So today's the 27th and I'm starting at Armidale Library. And then tomorrow I'm at Boyer Library in the morning, and then driving to Bunbury and doing a show in Bunbury, and then Busselton the following day. Back up to Perth Monday to do, Riverton Library in the morning and then Subiaco Library in the afternoon. Tuesday, I've got Mandurah in the morning and Rockingham, which isn't too far away, in the afternoon. Wednesday, I've got Town of Vincent in the morning and Bassendean in the afternoon. And Thursday, my old stomping ground, Melville. And then Friday, I'm doing a pure music show at the Backlot in Leederville.
Well, it's been lovely talking to you. Best of luck with that book tour and the musical end to it. Everyone's going to enjoy it, no doubt. It crosses my mind, just as a final comment, that Busselton is such a laid-back, quiet sort of place. It probably needs a really vicious crime there that someone should write about.
I think Busselton is a great idea. One thing I will say, too, before I forget, anybody who wants to, with the book, there's another component of this I got to. Page 33 of the book, and I was writing a point where Blake is playing a song, and I could hear the song so clearly in my head that I've written and recorded the song. So the song is called No Good Can Come From This. It's up on YouTube and also on Spotify, so people can find it, and I can get my third of a cent for somebody who listens to it. But if you are reading the book or you want to get a vibe of the era, and Martin Cillier, who I mentioned, who's a fabulous surf guitarist, is playing guitar on it. So No Good Can Come From This. Just look for Dave Warner and you'll find it.
Well, next time you pulled out one of your books digitally, you could work that sound file right at that point.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking that's a good idea.
Well, good luck with everything. Thanks, Dave. Yeah.